TV. TV. TV.
Okay, TV.
Welcome, welcome to
your Okay, first of all, my rendition last week was stylish and beautiful.
It was stylized, I'll give you that much. You were intentionally subverting the form. My beautiful, perfect form. And I think the audience would be very clear about which version they prefer.
Here's what I would like. Anyone who wrote in disliking my version ain't my friend.
Well, too bad. You're that thin-skinned about it, Charlie.
We're not friends anymore. I'm real Trump about this.
Look.
Love me fully and entirely.
You have been the creator of, you know, whatever sort of catchphrases or, you know, timbre of the show.
I can't help that.
Let me have this one thing that works for everyone but you. This is a podcast.
Where I was going.
This is a podcast of the television.
And right.
The blowhard over there is Dave White.
No.
Linoleum-knife.com.
I'm
Alonzo Duralde, film reviews editor for The Wrap.
You.
And film critic and TV recapper at What the Flick.
I just have one note.
I'll say.
For you.
One note, Johnny.
Blah, 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 complain, complain, blah, 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 I'm better than you, blah, blah, blah.
That's your one note.
That's actually like three different. That's three different aspects of my sparkling personality.
What's your one note?
The
dude?
Blah, blah, blah is charming. Complaints, all of my complaints are valid. The I'm better than you stuff is just, I just like to, you know, see you. I kind of like to see you get upset sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It adds, much like my rendition of the theme song last week, it adds spice to our life together.
Yes, some might call that emotional abuse, but spice works too. What's your one note, Dave White?
Vary your presentation.
I did it three different ways.
Not really.
Yeah.
You kind of sounded like a vintage TV game show announcer.
Yeah.
Just
that's,
then.
That's the idea.
Okay.
It's a theme song.
Are you going to do it? Are you going to do it like that next week though? I mean, like you've been kind of running through that, old school announcer
first time that I did it differently and I went for a more minimalist tack, you accused me of trying to sound like you. Like that was even on my radar. And second of all, it's a theme song, so it actually should be consistent from week to week the way that the music is. So why don't you take your one note and put it in a bucket, and then stick your head in it and cover it with gravy.
I was going to say,
and then wash it out in bubble gum and join the Navy.
Where's
the gravy?
Where's the bubble gum?
Where's the pumpkin pie? So, welcome to 2016, LKTV listeners.
We said this was LKTV, that it was a podcast of the television,
yes.
That you are you,
yes,
and
yes.
I am me.
Yes, and we are here together.
And that's, okay. I just blanked. Oh, first thing.
Yes.
First thing that everybody should know, we will continue to discuss making a murderer.
Yes.
But
we're way, way behind everyone else on Earth.
We are way, way behind everyone else on Earth. Yes, that is true. Also, we still may be ahead of some people who are listening to this who haven't started yet. Therefore, we're going to talk about it at the end.
Okay. And then you can just turn us off early if need be.
And even though we will talk about it at the end, we will let you know when we're going to talk about things that happen.
Yes.
So that you are not, like,
Seriously, we just got through episode three.
We're just at the end of episode three.
You guys are all probably way, way past us at this
point. But I know, like, some folks just haven't started yet.
Okay.
Like, I was just texting with Aaron earlier this morning, and he hasn't...
The king of the stupidest reality TV shows on Earth is not watching, like, the true crime show that everyone is talking about?
Not yet. Oh, yeah. He's a busy man, much like myself.
This is where your refusal to binge becomes a problem.
It's not a problem for anyone.
For me, it is.
Why?
Because I'd be far ahead at this point.
You have the capacity. This is a continuation now of the discussion we started last week.
I can gun it through more stuff.
You have the capacity to plant your buttocks on the couch and not move for hours.
Yeah.
Hours.
That's what couches are for.
No.
Okay, what if you had gone...
I can't sit still.
What if you had gone...
For that length of time on a couch.
What if you had gone to CineFamily and gotten a nice couch seat...
Yes.
...for out one?
We talked about this very scenario last week.
We did not talk about this one specifically.
Yes, we did.
We talked about just long movies, but
I think you specifically brought up out one.
No, I don't think I did. That's why I'm bringing it up now.
You go back and listen to an earlier episode.
Fine, whatever.
You'll find out what you said and what you didn't say. I have memories.
Yeah, unfailing.
And anyway, I still wouldn't want to do that.
All right, fine.
Here's why. Out One was never meant to be watched that way.
I know.
It was for French television.
I know. Same with Berlin Alexanderplatz.
Only gluttons for punishment do that sort of thing.
But Rivette apparently said that he did want people to watch it.
Guess what? He's dead now.
Is he?
I don't have to listen to him.
Is he definitely dead?
Yeah.
Do we know this?
He's really most sincerely dead.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
So the French New Wave is just Godard and Agnès Varda at this point? That's all that's left?
Is Claude Lelouch still alive?
Oh, Claude Lelouch is not part of the New Wave. Claude Lelouch will throw a drink in your face if you accuse me of being the New Wave.
No, but, you know, he was around in that time.
He's of that era, but he does not like those new... I did a Q&A with him once in Dallas at the USA Film Festival.
Jacques Rivette is alive.
I thought so! Memories, man. Oh, boy. Wrong again.
He's 87.
And he still loves Showgirls.
He's alive. Yeah. Sorry, Jacques Rivette.
Yeah.
I know you're listening. I'm
trying to prematurely bury the guy.
I love you, Jacques Rivette.
So the living Jacques Rivette wants people to watch Out One in one sitting, or two, one sitting with a long intermission or something.
He's almost dead. I don't have to listen to him. There.
Fine.
See what I did there?
And when that Blu-ray comes out, I think next month now, we could talk about it right here. We could review it here.
Yes.
Yes. And we'll watch it episodically.
Anyway, we're going to say goodbye at the end of the show, and then we're going to start talking about Making a Murderer.
Right.
So once we say goodbye, if you don't want to hear anything about Making a Murderer, you can stop. And then while we discuss Making a Murderer, we will tell you if there are going to be crazy spoilers that you don't want to hear.
Again,
episode three is one giant crazy spoiler for the most part.
Pretty much, yeah.
Episode three is where I had to stop the TV and talk to Gary Cotti, who I watched it with, for quite a while about issues of poverty and all sorts of things. And things I learned while being a middle school teacher, because that comes into play here as well. We'll get to all that. Gallivant.
Yeah, which you watched.
You'll notice the minute I finished looking at it, I eliminated it from the queue. Here's why.
Oh, you took out the whole one pass and everything. Okay.
No, I didn't take out the one pass.
Just that episode.
I didn't have a one pass for
Gallivant. Oh, you just... Okay.
I have auto-record for anything
Kylie
that
Minogue,
Kylie,
anything that's Kylie Minogue why we is had in. It in
TiVo. I have auto-record.
Of course. Yes, which means every time Biodome plays on Stars, it's in our TiVo thing.
Listen.
Or Street Fighter or whatever.
Biodome and Street Fighter are totally underrated.
I don't think that's true.
It's not true. I watched Gallivant just because...
Ms. Minogue.
My lady was on it.
Yes.
not a good show. It was on the cancellation bubble. I get what they're doing.
It's sort of jokey Game of Thrones, right, or something?
Maybe.
Or jokey Camelot.
They do reference Game of Thrones in the opening number. It's a musical, apparently. I don't know if the whole show every week is a musical, but the episode I watched with Kylie, everyone's singing.
Right. Well, I know she had a number.
Yeah. And here's what I can get from watching it. I watched episode one of season two, never having seen it before. It's a comedy. It's completely, you know, self-aware.
So, like, when things were rotten?
It knows it's a show. It knows it knows everything about everything.
Right.
It knows it's on the... It knows they were on the cancellation bubble. It knows...
So it's network TV, Monty Python, and the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Okay.
But not...
remotely as...
There were a few funny lines in it. But generally, the comedy is really... It reminded me a lot of Shrek.
Ew.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
That we're taking, you know... really familiar things that you know and winking at you. Only our winks make noise. And so I didn't like it. This was, again, before we watched Making a Murderer, Gary was sitting here with me in the house watching it with me. And he was like, he goes, this show's terrible. I was like, yeah, it's not that great. Mr. Gallivant, who's played by an actor named Joshua something like that. He's Kylie's boyfriend.
Right.
In real life. Like, they're a thing off camera. He's sailing the seas to find his princess true love. She's been separated from him. Somehow, for some reason, he has to find her and save her, rescue her, whatever. He's got pirates with him, at least in last night's episode. Hugh Bonneville from Downton Abbey is one of the pirates. He sings. Daisy from Downton Abbey is like the handmaiden to the princess who he has to rescue. I forget. I don't know that actress's name.
She was in Brand of Cinderella, too.
Sophie something?
Maybe.
Is that her name? Why don't you look it up?
Fine.
She sings, like, everyone's dancing and singing the whole episode. And
judging by the title, I suspect it's always a musical. Just a thought.
Perhaps. His name is Gallivant.
Right, but still. Yeah.
And so the pirates land on they crash into an island. They find a pub called the Enchanted Forest. It's a gay...
Joshua Sasa.
Sasa.
Yeah. Oh, Vinny Jones is on this show?
Vinny Jones is on it. My Gelson's friend. I've seen him in Gelson's like three times.
Sophie McShera.
Yeah. Yeah, Vinny Jones. Seen him at the grocery store a few times in our neighborhood. He's a tall guy.
As opposed to, what's his face? Crank.
Crank. Statham.
Jason Statham, yes.
Not super tall.
Not at all.
No. And then they wind up in this gay bar. And everyone, all the guys in the place are all like, ooh, a new person, and he looks like this.
Yeah,
because Joshua Sasa is... It's that kind of extreme handsome that if you it plays really well on TV and in film. It's the kind of person that you can look at a remove, like on a screen, and think, well, that's a really good looking guy. But if you met him in person, you would have to shield your eyes as though you were staring into the sun. Like, it's that kind of
he should be in Italian Vogue in black and white.
It's bizarre. it's an almost alien kind of beauty when you see people like that. The time I literally bumped into Charlize Theron at the opera, I felt the same way. I was like, oh my God. First of all, not only it was Charlize Theron standing right there, but she's insanely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at her in person and you're like, I can't look at it again.
I need two pieces of cardboard with a pinhole in one of them.
Yeah. So, of course, they are all in love with him, and then they're like, we must present him to the Queen of Queens. Get it? Yeah. Out comes Kylie. She sings a song called Off With His Shirt. They do. So he dances around shirtless and sings. You know, he dances with her. She installs him as the bartender of the gay pub, which is another clever little wink, because every gay bar you go to, the bartenders are shirtless.
True.
Almost all the time.
They want tips.
And that's how they, yeah, that's how they get their amazing tips. Yeah. So,
How would you compare Kylie's musical number in this
movie?
It's
bad. It's a bad song.
Oh, I was going to say, how would you compare it to her number in Holy Motors?
There's no comparison.
I know, I was kidding.
That's not a thing that you can compare. A beautiful song in Holy Motors that breaks your heart.
Yes.
And this, you know, camp moment.
Which I bet you, like, gay bars in Dallas will play on video screens.
Maybe.
For years
probably,
to come.
Probably, yeah. Probably. And you know me, I'm a diehard for Ms. Minogue.
Yes.
This may be the worst thing I've ever seen her do.
Worse than Biodome?
She didn't sing in Biodome.
Gotcha.
So
there was a musical thing you've seen her do.
Yeah. As far as TV, as far as Kylie singing on television goes, it's no Especially For You, that's for sure.
Well.
Yeah.
You can't have everything.
Well, I want everything.
Sometimes you can't have anything.
Here's what I do not want any more of.
What's that?
Gallivant!
Just gallivanting off of your TiVo.
I am also, you know, wondering, did they, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
The relationship or the cameo?
Did she agree to be in a cameo and sing a song and then meet him and say, ah, yes, you're my next. I pick you. Come along, young man.
Bring that to my tent.
Yeah.
Or were they already dating and did she agree to do the cameo to help the show?
Because here's the thing, you know, if you pay any attention to her extra musical activities, she knows how to put it on a man because she has like a string of guys.
True.
Never married, no kids. She just goes from dude to dude. I assume she's a serial monogamist. But after Michael Hutchence, who knows what she is other than into hot guys.
I was going to say KG, but yeah, that works.
Into hot guys that she can just have.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good for her. Because he's a good-looking man.
Was he like a model before this, do you mean?
I can't imagine him having been anything else. You know, if he was your waiter somewhere, you would have been like, just don't hurt me with your prettiness.
Your cheekbones are slicing me to bits.
So, yeah, I don't ever want to watch that show again.
Okay, fair enough.
Unless she comes back on and sings another bad song written by Alan Menken.
Oh, Alan Menken is writing the song?
Uh-huh.
You know, his output has not been the same since Howard Ashman died.
The lyrics of the song, they threaten to feed him to the bear. Yeah. And there's this, like, fat dude in the corner waving, like, hello, hello, Gallivant.
Wow. Okay, never watching this. Thank you, ABC.
We started rewatching Signe Chanel because we've talked about it so many times.
Yes.
That our weekly Sunday night dinner friends came over.
Yes.
And we were like, hey, guys, anybody seen Signe Chanel? Who wants to watch that? And everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. It reminded me, once again, of what badasses those seamstresses are.
Oh, man. Yeah. They are unflappable.
Signe Chanel is on the M2M channel. Yes.
On Apple TV.
Apple TV.
Made to measure.
It's a 5 or 6-part docu-series from France, made in 2005. It's officially 10 years old now. And it's all about the Chanel Haute Couture collection and how it is made.
Yeah, from sketches to runway show.
And it's about 15% Karl Lagerfeld and about 85% these 60-year-old women in the seamstress room.
Yeah.
Taking care of business.
Exactly.
It's not like a reality show like the way you think. It really is like a documentary series.
Right.
And these women are brilliant. And they're so much fun to spend time with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they... It becomes this bizarre series of phone calls within the within the, you know, the house.
Right. Carl's coming.
Carl is coming. And the seamstresses hang up and go, who cares?
I mean, like,
bother us when he shows up.
I have no...
Oh, he's left the house.
Yeah, ooh,
great. Everyone get a yogurt. It's time for a break.
I have no great proclivity for fashion, but it is one of those docs where you really get a sense of how stuff gets made, what people do as, you know, what's their job, how do they do it, why, what makes them good at it, you know. Yeah, it's great television. I love watching it. We also, with our Sunday folks, I had seen these two episodes, but now y'all are catching up, and I guess we'll all proceed together with HBO's Getting On.
Which I did not know at first was a British series.
Yeah, it's a remake of a British show from the creators of Big Love.
And...
Or rather, the American remake is from the creators of Big Love.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
How many seasons have already been on? Two?
Three.
There have been three seasons already?
Or we might be in season three, but like on the HBO Go, it says season one, two, three.
Oh, okay. Well, that's how far behind we are.
Yeah, I know.
But at two episodes every Sunday, we'll catch up fairly quickly.
Sure.
And it is fantastic. I had been meaning to watch it.
Yeah, me too.
Because I wanted to see how accurate it was in terms of, you know, my experience with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And for, you know, for 8 years, anyone who's listening who doesn't know this already, for 8 years, my mother was in a nursing home. But they don't call them nursing homes anymore. I don't think anything is called a nursing home anymore. They're skilled nursing facilities. They are
recovery centers.
Recovery centers. They're rehabs. They can call them any number of things now, but nobody wants to live in a nursing home.
Right.
And so now, in this series, it's set in what I understand to be a hospital medical campus.
Right. They're in like a wing of a facility in Long Beach.
And so, and they don't call it a nursing home. They call it like hospice care, rehab facility. So
recovery, I think.
Recovery. Yeah. Any euphemism for... You're coming here and you're not leaving.
Right.
Of your own volition. And so everyone on the show is great. Alex Borstein, Niecy Nash, Roseanne.
Laurie Metcalf. Who's the guy who plays Patsy?
I don't know. I've never seen him before.
He's really good too.
Yeah. And so it seems fairly accurate.
Well, one thing that I had not really noticed that much the first time I watched the second episode which June Squibb is on, a character gets a patient gets removed from the facility,
mm-hmm.
and they cover the coffin in this sort of like brightly covered fabric so it doesn't look like a coffin is wheeling its way down the hallway.
Well, they don't put you in a coffin.
Well, whatever the they put you in a box, and the box is sort of orange, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I never saw anyone.
Mel Rodriguez is the guy who's Patsy.
In the 8 years of my mom's life in the Dallas nursing home,
mm-hmm.
I never saw anyone being removed.
Ah.
It happened regularly, but I never saw the actual removal of a body.
I'm sure they have it down.
Here's what I'm guessing happens. They get you in the bag, mm-hmm. and they roll you out. And yeah. they put a sheet over the bag. That's what I'm going to guess. Hmm. And I think that if you live there, you just become accustomed mm-hmm. to that happening. Everyone else around you is old or older than you.
Sure.
My mom was one of the young ones there. She was in
no,
her,
I remember.
She was in her 60s.
I'm just saying,
and
I'm
needed,
sure.
But needed 24-hour care.
I'm sure they have a system set up whereby it's all done very, you know, with as little fuss as possible.
Yeah, and as discreetly as possible. Yeah, yeah. But the gossip travels.
Oh, well, sure, yeah.
Just like that, because at dinners and lunches, mm-hmm. those old ladies around at my mom's table are always like, well, they took blah, blah, blah. She died. That, and they have no, like, they're not discreet or soft about it at all.
Right.
Like, when the old ladies were sitting around my mom's table talking about it, they were like, we knew she was fixing to go.
There's no euphemisms going on.
No,
there.
None at all. So.
And I like the look of this show because it
fluorescent.
It is so fluorescent. Yeah. It is so institutional in a way that TV shows rarely ever want to look like, you know. And I'm sure that probably turns people off. I think it's the kind of thing where if you're changing channels, you just think, like you think you've stumbled upon, like, you know, the MSNBC Friday Night in Prison.
Prison shows,
you know?
Yeah. Those are great, too.
I can't watch those.
I watch a lot of those. Ugh. Yeah.
Like, a lot of times the TV will stay on that channel after getting mad out that night, and I'll see, like, a couple minutes, and I'm like, no. No, thank you.
I'm okay with watching the prison show. I'll just sit there, and if Rachel Maddow is over and she says, you're going to prison, I'm like, all right.
Meanwhile, in the cafeteria, tensions are running high.
I'm going to prison.
Yeah, no thanks. Speaking of Maddow, you've got to watch this segment that she had last night that was really fascinating in terms of a TV thing, where, you know, it's amazing how short our collective memories become as the years pass, as far as, like, our history, our you know, our shared history, because when people talk about the Donald Trump campaign.
Yeah.
It's often in terms of, it's like, oh, it's this sort of unprecedented thing and how, you know, he's not your usual politician and we've never seen it. And it turns out, no, everything that happens has happened before.
Yes.
And the Rachel Maddow Show dug out all this footage of George Wallace's campaign in 1968.
Did you save this?
I didn't, but I posted a link to it because the Salon had a piece where they had the clips. If they're on the MSNBC site too, I'll try and post them on our page. But just this really interesting parallel of, like, here was another guy who ran as an outsider, demonized the media, like, you know, talked to crowds in the same way. Just a lot. And there's nothing like the video side by side of, like, here's clips from a Wallace rally, and now this is what a Trump rally looks like. It's like, oh, wow, you know. And as she keeps pointing out, it's not like Trump was some fringe candidate. He carried, like, five states in 1968.
Yeah.
You know, and again, he was sort of speaking for the id of a certain branch of the American political scene in the same way that Trump does now, you know. So it's, you know, we always talk about how people in the media will...
Disenfranchised idiots.
Yes, basically. But we talk about how people in the media
Don't mince words.
The people in the media will say stuff as though there was no internet, or as though there's never been, like... As though the cameras haven't been on all this time.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
And it's just so easy to sort of dig the footage up, like, nope, that's not true, and nope, that's not true. But this was a case where, you know, I think there's something about the way that education has changed, the way that literacy has changed, the way that cultural literacy has changed, that we forget stuff that happened within, like, our own lifetimes or our parents' lifetimes, you know? And so 1968 seems like a million years ago, but there's all these parallels that you can connect, you know? And there's an immediacy to drawing those parallels in TV news that's a lot more vivid than if you read it in an article somewhere, you know? So anyway, I just thought that was a very cool piece of reporting.
I will watch that. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I can handle one ugly, nasty Trump bit of information per week. Yeah. I can't deal with it on a daily basis because it just depresses me. Because he has this hold on people now.
Mm-hmm.
And it sickens me. I think he's a repulsive human being.
Yeah.
And if he becomes president, I will despair. Like, and each new awful Republican that becomes president, I think they can't get any worse.
Mm.
But if he becomes president, it will become worse.
Yeah.
It will be even grosser than we've ever imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even think about it. Like, the joke of him is long over.
Oh,
for
yeah,
me.
No. And it's not even, we're past the point of even thinking that this was just sort of a gimmicky, like, attention getting run. Like, no, he's in it to win it.
Yeah.
You know, and so we have to take that seriously.
I saw a guy at the Century City Mall with a Make America Great cap on again. And I just wanted to go up and punch him in the face. And then I thought, no, if I did that, I would be like a person at a Trump rally.
Right.
Who will punch you in the face for whatever they feel like punching you in the face for.
Right.
But I did want to do it. I wanted to smack it off his head.
Well, I'm glad you restrained yourself. Just a reminder, everyone, if you haven't registered to vote and you live in the United States,
yeah,
and you are 18 or over, go do that. I have, because you aren't watching it with me, I have been allowing myself to do some binging on Transparent. I have gotten into season 2 now.
I'll get to it. It's just going to be at your pace. At my low and slow pace.
I understand. It's really good. Season 2 is unusual in that, you know, I think season 1, you know, a lot of the Netflix shows that we've watched and the Amazon shows, I think, are still sort of structured in a way of being episodes, you know, where each episode is kind of a contained thing, but at the same time part of a larger serialized storyline.
Yes.
And there's something about season 2 of Transparent that almost feels like, you're going to binge this thing anyway, so we're just going to sort of stop at the end of a half hour, and it's not going to feel like each one is as discrete a unit. And that's not a bad thing. It's just interesting to watch a show that's clearly been designed with the idea of being a piece of a larger whole that doesn't have to sort of feel like it has even a bit of resolution to it or you know, a kind of cohesion to it that's gonna separate it from the next one, you know. I mean, not entirely. It's not completely freeform, but it just feels more like they don't care about that as much because they realize that people are gonna watch this in chunks, if not the whole thing in one sitting.
As you do,
as I do,
yes.
But yeah, no, it's I really like the performances. I like how unlikable the lead characters are. Like, everybody in this family is messed up in some really severe ways. And
including Jeffrey Tambor's character?
Jeffrey Tambor is at least trying to, you know, Maura is, you know, trying to make her way in the world, but she's no saint either. You know, she has had, there's stuff from her past that has affected her children. There's stuff in her present where, you know, I think she still can be kind of selfish or whatever. But she's the best of the bunch, certainly.
Right.
But it's interesting that the show gives you these characters who are there to kind of be the victims of these other characters. And that's hard to watch because you realize, oh, wow, I've gotten to like, you know, the rabbi who's played by Catherine Hahn or the character played by Carrie Brownstein. And you realize that their affection for one of the members of the Pfefferman family is only going to blow up in their face and bring them heartbreak. So that's kind of a cool approach, I think. But super well acted. And there have been these flashbacks to the 1930s that have begun in 1930s Berlin,
yes.
In fact, in season 2, where they haven't quite explained where that's going yet, but I'm told by people who love the show that it resolves itself very well. So, So yeah, there's the it's cool stuff. I see why it's so acclaimed, and they've got a lot of cool like lesbian filmmakers have been working on the show, like Nisha Ganatra and Stacey Passon, and I know that Silas Howard is directing an episode in the second season. So, you know, again, as much as this show has taken some heat in certain corners of the community for having a cis male actor playing a trans woman, you know, in the lead role, they have been offering a lot of opportunities for trans actors and also trans sort of below the line, you know, production people and, you know, script supervisors and in pretty much every facet of the production. So, you know, I dig the show and I'm glad it's doing well. I'm glad that, you know, it's found an audience and the people are, it's being included in the conversation and that it's a hit for Amazon.
Have they mentioned at all the world's most famous trans person?
Not
in the show
yet. Not in any of the episodes I've seen. No.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's a conscious choice or
do we live in a world? Do we live in a Caitlyn free world in this
on that show?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there aren't a lot of signifiers regarding dates, so you know.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting, though, that since you mentioned it, that Caitlyn has become, Caitlyn Jenner has become involved in the awards campaign for Tangerine. There was a Q&A. Tell me more. Okay, so the Duplass brothers, who have been, I think they're producers of the film.
Of Tangerine?
Of Tangerine.
Maybe.
I know they've been very vocal and involved in getting, trying to get the two main actresses in the film, you know, awards attention. They hosted a Q&A at, I think, the Arclight this past week.
Oh, really?
That, you know, they were, the Duplasses were there, the you know, Kiki Rodriguez and Maya Taylor were both there.
Right.
And Caitlyn was there. She spoke some, but was mainly sort of there to kind of, you know, throw attention to the actresses. So yes. That's, you know, I think an example of her using her spotlight and trying to reflect it somewhere else.
I just looked it up. The Duplasses were both executive
producers. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, good honor for that.
I, you know, I'm definitely pro Tangerine.
Sure.
I was just curious about whether they had incorporated.
Yeah, it hasn't.
Ms. Jenner into the situation.
I'll keep an ear open, but so far it has not been mentioned on the show.
I was going to ask you. Oh, I did walk through the living room one at the exact moment for the Eileen Miles cameo.
Yes,
because I know Cherry Jones is on this season,
right?
Playing.
An Eileen Miles-ish.
She's playing Eileen Miles.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the character is entirely based on Eileen Miles. Mm-hmm. That's what I have read.
Right.
And so when Cherry Jones showed up, I was like, oh, hey, there she's being Eileen Miles. And the camera moves over to the right. I was like, oh, wait, that's actually Eileen Miles.
I would imagine that Eileen Miles would say that that's not what's going on because the Cherry Jones character is shown with this, like, much, much...
Hey, you don't know.
Much younger girlfriend. That's true. Maybe I did.
Eileen Miles might...
be a cradle robber.
Like I'm young and nubile. You don't know.
I don't know. You're right. You are right. I don't know.
What's good for the goose, et cetera, or the gander. What's good for the gander? Good for the goose.
What's sauce for the goose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, as someone I know said, season two gets real lesbian. Which it does, but, good. You know, I mean, I think it... Within believable parameters.
I need more real lesbian.
Yeah. Why not? Jill Soloway...
I need more real lesbian and less gallivant.
Well, fair enough. Jill Soloway, not a lesbian, but her sister Faith, who's a writer, who's a playwright, and I think was a writer on 6 Feet Under, is a lesbian and has a writing credit on...
Oh, Jill Soloway is not a lesbian?
I don't think so.
I just thought she was.
No. I don't think she is. I
thought everyone on that show was queer of some sort.
I could be wrong, but it's my understanding that she's not.
Oh.
But that Faith definitely is.
I see. I'll get to it.
I know.
I just haven't.
Look, I'm late to the party. You know, it's a much discussed show that I've been wanting to get to, but it's not. It hasn't been on my, you know, what the flick. sheet, you know, things that I have to watch, so I've been letting it slip, so now I'm finally catching up. Also on my What the Flick thing, but since you are watching it, we can talk about it, is Downton Abbey.
Class War, Daisy.
Daisy the Red Menace.
I know you guys didn't really talk about that on your recap, other than to express appreciation for... the response that she got from the new owner
yeah.
of that estate.
I talked about how she had been the teacher character from last season well, that sort yeah. of revved up her her sense of class distinction and whatnot. So yeah, no, we totally talked about that.
I really want Daisy. Here's everybody go look at the What the Flick recap and breakdown because they take 20 minutes on it and it's thorough. We don't really need to go into it so much here.
No.
But I need the following things to happen. I need Edith to get out of that house.
Edith is becoming her own woman.
She is totally the most interesting person at the moment.
Yeah.
On the show. Her outfits are the most on point. Mm-hmm. Mary, I think, used to be the fashion one, but now it's Edith.
Yeah.
This first episode has all been Edith's outfits. And
very much a Roaring Twenties kind of, not, she doesn't look like a flapper, but there's a lot of, Arte-inspired tailoring.
Smart-tailored women's power lady outfits. Yeah. She needs to get it to London.
Mm-hmm. Take that, Marigold.
Take that kid. Go run the media empire.
Yeah.
Leave that house in the country where nothing happens.
And that doomed lifestyle.
Zero things happen at that place. Literally nothing happens. They go for walks.
There's a hunt.
They hunt. Mary has a job. Mary has things to do. Mary's like, I'm the estate manager now. We're not hiring anyone else.
Yeah.
Guess what? We're not hiring someone to do this. I'm doing it. I'm taking over. Dad is bad at everything.
Right. Except getting rid of blackmailers.
But Mary would have figured out how to get rid of that woman eventually, too.
I don't know. She wasn't doing so hot.
Well, but she was saying, go ahead and say it out loud. I don't care.
Right, but that's not how you take care of a blackmailer, by having them drag your name through the mud.
Mud schmud. That family on that show has been full of scandal from the moment they started.
Yes, but they stay a step ahead. That's the point. That's what makes them,
So I want Edith to bug out.
Aristocrats.
I want her to get her go bag. And go. I just got you a go bag, by the way.
Oh, did you?
I just bought one.
Okay.
I got you that Dora the Explorer.
Good.
And it's...
with a walkie-talkie, I hope.
With a, yes. And a sippy cup. There's a sippy cup. There's a battery-powered walkie-talkie. You can talk to another Dora fan as much as 30 feet away from you.
And some fruit snacks.
Some fruit roll-up. Some fruit by the yard. Fruit by the foot. Is that what they... Yeah. Fruit by the foot. Yeah. And, No, yours, it's black, just like mine, yeah.
Great. Yes, Edith needs to get a life of her own, and
Daisy needs to go with her.
Yeah.
She needs to go with her and be her cook in London while she sets up her own cook business.
Mm.
Daisy needs to become, caterer to society and run her own thing.
Sure.
Because that whole estate has 10 more years.
Max.
Yeah.
That's assuming they survive the crash of 29.
If they survive, the crash, they're still gonna shrink.
Yes.
And historically, all of those houses, they stay in the family if there's family to have it stay in. But they all become tourist attractions.
Right.
They all become tourist attractions. The very house they film in
is a tourist
attraction. Is the most popular tourist attraction in England. And so it's, I just read another story about an old estate, this building, a house that was built in the 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
And the family still lives in it, but they live in just a chunk of it. And the rest of the house is... open to the public.
And that's not even an exclusively British thing. I mean, have you ever seen High Society?
You know what? I never have seen High Society.
The musical remake of Philadelphia Story, Grace Kelly at one point drives Frank Sinatra on this tour of these like these grand houses of Newport, Rhode Island,
right,
that are now boarded up because the families can't afford them anymore.
Yeah,
you know, so there's definitely a cyclical economy. You know, and I mean, sadly, unfortunately, we're given the income inequality of the U.S., I'm sure people are, you know, we have the Queen of Versailles types who are building these enormous, ridiculous houses on islands.
But a house
and stuff
like that will simply just be destroyed
and turned into a housing development, you know,
and turned into other properties. Like, no one's going to save that house,
right?
Because it's gross to start with. It's
right.
It's like the worst McMansion in the world
times 10.
Only 10 times the size.
Yeah.
It's nasty.
Yeah.
And, but you know, these old, they're castles,
yes,
essentially.
Yes.
You know, you, I mean, you want to look at them.
Sure.
You want to, I love looking at it every week that I'm watching Downton Abbey.
Yes.
So yeah, that's all I care about. I want
you want Edith and
Edith
Daisy
and,
to get out.
Edith and Daisy. Daisy has been my favorite character from the beginning.
Well, she was our an entree into that world. The first episode is her getting hired.
Yeah.
So we learn everything through her eyes.
Did I say Edith was my favorite character? I meant Daisy.
Daisy, yes.
Daisy is my favorite character from the beginning.
Yeah. Nobody liked Edith for the first two seasons.
No. Edith was mean. If you go back and watch season one, Edith was
she's a conniver.
Mean to the other daughters.
Yeah, although, you know, she had reason to be. You know,
she had reason to be pissed off at Mary. Mary was not nice.
Mary
back
was not
to
nice
her.
Back, and she was the one who was going to get everything. You know, for simply from being born first.
Right.
You know?
All right. So I have continued watching Born This Way.
Oh yeah, and I caught a few bits of it as I was walking through the room. It's not I was not as offended as I thought I was going to be by thinking the show is being exploitative.
It's not doing that at all. There were hints of it in the first episode because I don't know that they knew where they wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I think very quickly they understood. And maybe they understood it from before they started, but
it was lost in translation.
Editing, tone, that first episode, the pilot episode, felt like it could tip into
Real Housewives
territory, rather than something like, say, I Am Jazz.
Right.
But it's definitely more in the I Am Jazz camp than anything. It still has a few rhythms of what look like they might be manufacturing a little
drama
between people. But here's the thing. You can't manufacture drama if the characters on the show don't know that they're supposed to run with being bitches to each other.
Mm.
And none of these kids really get it. And I say kids, the oldest one is like 32. Mm. But most of them are in their early 20s, very early 20s. And it's actually quite a caring show. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning so much about people with Down syndrome that I never knew. Assumptions that I made just as part of the culture of non-Down syndrome people who think they know what that's about. The idea that the parents are the best. They have all the parents on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents really lay it down. The parents will tell you the most commonly asked questions that they get. And I thought it was really interesting. One of the parents was like, the question that I get all the time is, how old is she mentally of the daughter?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and you could see the look on his face. The look on his face was, you know what I mean?
Let me explain this to you.
Yeah, it's like she's an adult. She's 21, 22, whatever old she is.
Mm.
And he said, it depends on the day and it depends on the activity.
Mm.
You know, are there things that she will never understand? Yes. Does she understand that she wants a boyfriend and to get married and all that kind of stuff? Does she have a fully functioning adult need to be an adult? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And does she want as much independence as she can possibly have and to do as much stuff for herself as she possibly can? Yes. And so there is no good answer to what is the mental age of a person with Down syndrome. The answer is...
It depends on the person. It depends on the person.
It depends on the circumstances. And you can't really give a number to that sort of thing. You can only say, today, at this point in this person's life, they are capable of doing this. They're capable of doing this.
Sure.
And,
you know, we know very mature 25-year-olds and very immature 55-year-olds.
That is a fact.
Down syndrome doesn't play into it at all.
Yes. I'm really liking the show, and I am starting to notice sort of alliances is the wrong word, but we are talking about reality television here, so it's a bit of that
friendships that
definitely move along ability lines.
Hmm.
So, like, the two or three people on the show whose abilities are much less advanced than the other folks. The other folks are nice to them,
mm-hmm.
but they're not really hanging out. You know? Gotcha. There's that one guy on the show who he called himself as having mosaic.
Mm-hmm.
Down syndrome, which is where you've kind of got one foot in and one foot out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rough description, but you see him hanging out with one of the other guys, and the other guy will just talk, and he'll look at him and be kind of as close to rolling his eyes as he can get, you know, like being like, okay, yeah, you know, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to say that, you know. And it's an interesting dynamic to witness.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
I'm happy it's not gross.
No, it is not gross.
Okay.
They're not going to obviously, you know, how many shows have there been about people with Down syndrome besides Life Goes On and Becky on Glee?
Right.
There haven't really been.
No, I'm happy about the visibility.
It can't be all things to all people, but it's not terrible.
Okay.
I'm totally
good.
Invested in watching this.
I was just, my worry was that they were going to be exploitative, and it sounds like they are not. So,
well, initially, the friend who turned me onto it was sort of like, it's The Hills. And I was like, really? Who agreed to that? Like, what parents said, oh yeah, put my young daughter on a show like that?
Right.
None of them.
Okay.
There was a genuine moment of bitchiness from one young woman to the next in
right.
the first episode.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And that was a little jarring and instantly became kind of an internet meme. But I have not seen that repeated since then. Mostly because when these kids are mean to each other, one of them's going to start crying. And then you're a bad person.
Yeah.
You made them cry. Don't make them cry. And Elena, she cries at everything.
Hmm.
She's the oldest, actually, of the bunch, I think. And she cries every episode over something. Yeah. And so... it's a fascinating show. I'm
okay.
Yeah. I know you're always distrustful of my reality TV love, and by rights, you ought to be most of the time. But I'm not a monster.
If you say so.
Besides, I got plenty of other reality shows to satisfy that need.
Right.
Shaw's coming back.
Shaw's will be back.
Shaw's will be back in spring, you guys. Greatest show on television. Starring all of my best TV friends.
Speaking of Bravo, for people who listen to this show right away, on Thursday night, January 7th, our dear friend and host of the other program, Linoleum Knife, Gray Drake, will be the bartender on Bravo's Watch What Happens. And
what happens with the... First of all, I don't think I've ever seen that show.
I've only seen bits of it.
What do they do with the bartending?
It's a show that's live on the East Coast, and a lot of times it's where Andy Cohen will sit down and have a cocktail with...
I've seen clips of it.
Yeah, like on the internet. Soup or whatever. Yeah. You know, either with people who are on current Bravo shows or with sort of happening culture.
I knew
folks.
That too.
So tomorrow,
I can't say I've never seen it. I've seen bits on.
Okay, so tomorrow night's guests are Samuel L. Jackson and Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, and Sam Jackson and Gray are.
I forgot about that.
They're bros.
Maybe that's how that connection happened. Anyway, so Gray will be pouring the drinks. And all I can think of is that episode of Difficult People where I think Billy was going to be the bartender, and then like Mark Shaman shows up, and they talk about the mean smash recaps that the Julie Klausner character had done, and they get kicked out.
Yeah, we've got that in the DVR,
yes.
Ready to go.
So anyway, if you catch this episode in time, you know, don't miss.
We caught two new episodes of Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this show.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, I'm in now.
Yeah.
I mean, you made me watch four of them last week, so I mean, I'm in for the pound at this point. But I really like her.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, I think it's a little overwritten.
How so?
Well, I think they work really hard to remind you about what a badass she is. What an emotional badass she is in terms of being mean, rude to people. And I think it's an overstated. Episode 6, and they're still doing it.
Uh-huh.
They can lay off a little bit on that. It's overstating the case,
I guess. But I mean, at the same time, you know, it's such an active thing in her life. Like, you know, where we've gotten to the point now where they have created a support group for victims of Kilgrave,
and she rejects.
That she adamantly refuses to go to, and so I think that's her denial of her own issues plays into that.
No, I know, and that's not the part I object to. It's sort of like when she says things like, I reject this and I reject this, and you're like,
I guess, I don't know, I don't
mind. All right, yes, we know you're tough.
It doesn't bother me, but I hear what you're saying.
Just punch something, then show us how tough you are. Speaking of punching something.
Oh, yeah, you were pointing out.
I don't like the fight scenes on this show. I've seen enough of them now. They have one pretty much every episode, and it looks like I'm watching choreography. Yeah. They're not...
Organic.
Forceful enough for me, and they don't feel real.
The ones on Daredevil were better, for sure.
Make it look like the Raid, you guys. Do it. We live in a world where the Raid exists. Right. So now that the Raid exists, all fighting needs to aspire
to that standard.
To the Raid.
I like the way they use flashbacks in this show.
Yeah.
Because so much about what colors the characters, not just her, but Trish and Luke and some of the other ones, are things that happened in the past. And I like that the show sort of gives it to us in little dribs and drabs along the way, you know. And so we're constantly sort of reassessing our ideas about people and where they come from and what happened to them and the specific details of those things as the story continues. I like the way that's being laid out.
How many episodes in this season are there?
I believe it's
12,
it's 12, 13? Or, 12 or 13.
Yeah. All right, so we've seen, what, six
so
now?
So we're about halfway in, yeah.
All right. So two more weeks and we'll have worked through the season.
I think, yeah, if we stay on it.
I think here's what I would like to do. As much as I enjoy our husbandly couch time together, I'm a one episode at a time
guy. Okay.
When you make me sit through two, three, four in a row, unless it's a sitcom, and even then I'm only good for two. I want to get up and
So you're saying...
I need to get up and vacuum something.
You want to go your own way.
I need to get up and fold clothes. I need to get up and do some ironing. I need to get up and wash a sink load of dishes.
All right.
I need to get up and plan dinner. Like, I need to get up and move and do a thing. I can't just plant myself.
Okay. Well, we'll meet here next week, having both watched episodes 7, 8, and 9 on our own time.
How about 7, 8, 9, and 10?
Okay.
That way, we'll have three more after that.
Okay.
Because that's a week to give me time to watch four episodes. I can take it at my own pace.
Fine. Done.
That's what I'll do.
Okay.
You and I can enjoy husbandly couch time for something like Great British Bake Off or whatever.
Which I still not started watching that.
I will join you. You can join me.
I caught some of Great Holiday Baking Show, but that was about it.
Oh, yeah. By the way. Paul Tran. Nice showing me up on the internet.
Well, you know.
Here's what he does. I made the cranberry bread.
Yes.
From Holiday Baking Show.
Yes.
I made it Christmas morning.
Right.
I did not shape it into a candy cane.
Nope.
Because who cares?
Yeah.
I did not sugar the cranberries to dot the top. All I did was I took reserved cranberry jam and I individually like dropped the cranberries out of that onto the top. Because I was like, sugar these. Who cares? I'm not sugaring the cranberries. It's going to taste exactly the same.
And you know who did care?
Hang on. I made it. It leaked everywhere. The photo I took for Instagram, the jam is smeared all over the parchment. It's like half eaten. There have been like three people just madly devouring it. It looks like a complete mess. And it's just in the shape of a loaf. It's not even in the shape of a candy cane. Now that peppermint sugar glaze is on top, did it taste very candy cane-ish.
Yes.
Oh man, it was so delicious. But here comes Mr. Perfect. Shapes his like a candy cane. No leakage.
Sugars
the cranberries. Puts it on top. Posts it online. Look what I did, everybody. Then goes to my Instagram page. D. Leland White. Leland is my middle name. D. Leland White.
Yes.
Goes to my Instagram page, clicks like on my picture, and says, "Great job, Dave." I will end him. Paul Tran.
I'm sure he didn't mean anything by it. He said he made...
Oh, this is a gauntlet throne.
He said he was inspired by you to make it.
Inspired to one-up me.
To make it better.
Inspired to show me up. We're in a fight now. You and me. We're in a pastry fight, Paul Tran.
He also sent us a great clip from...
You're going to teach me a lesson. As you just did.
He sent us a great clip.
But we're still in a fight.
From Happy Endings that had the line, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard." And I've heard Dave try to explain the housing bubble. Which, if you heard the podcast of The Cinema last week, you know that even watching The Big Short, Dave had no idea how any of this works.
I don't understand the housing crisis. Other than, well, I understand the gist of it. Horrible people did a bad thing. Other horrible people profited from it. The end. Everyone else got screwed.
Anyway.
People wound up living in tent cities.
I know.
Congratulations.
Let's do letters, and then we can talk about making a murderer.
Letters. All right. Here are some letters. Linoleum.
Oh,
podcast. Shh. Just hold on. This is from Jesse. See how fast I was there?
Okay.
Magic internet fingers. Hi there, fellows. I spent a portion of my post-Christmas visit home burning through all of Making a Murderer. And have learned to use/read Reddit. Good. I never have.
More than I've ever
read. Well, no, I've read Reddit. I just don't want to read Reddit. Yeah. Something I have fought for years. I have fought and won. I have won the war against Reddit in my own life. I just to read all the theories, thoughts, and Dean Strang pseudo fanfiction I can. But LKTV was my most gratifying post game analysis of the series. Well, we're not post game.
We're mid game.
We were post episode 2.
Yeah.
The first time we talked about it, just for the record, for everyone's record.
Yes.
My most gratifying post-game analysis of the series, because Dave White crystallized in a very eloquent, emotional way. See what I am?
Mm, yes.
Eloquent. Emotional. Why I had such an uneasy, familiar feeling during the whole of the series. In Dave's words, the, quote, sticky octopus tentacles of lower, lower, lower middle class ignorance and small town quicksand, and the bone deep familiarity with all the players on the stage as people you knew, quote, back home. The mix of empathy and frustration and anxiety I felt didn't have a name until Dave worked through it during the latest episode. My feelings were exacerbated by an additional layer. Despite being from the other side of the state, all those Wisconsin folks have the same accent as all of my immediate and extended family and me when I'm overtired or a little tipsy. Can't wait until you have worked through more eps, Dave. Alonzo is right to revoke your LKTV theme song rights. Hey!
Ha-ha! See?
Now I'm in a fight with Jesse.
Your eloquence has boundaries.
This is from Linda. Hi, I listened to an older... Do we have enough episodes to have an older episode?
Well, we're like at episode 10 now.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
They just sneak up on you, don't
they? I listened to an older LKTV podcast recently. Loved your comments, R.E., Mr. Robot. Let me make one thing clear. I love Mr. Robot. However, I sympathize with your distress regarding annoying fans. I feel the same way about Breaking Bad people. I like Mr. Robot because it is smartly written, non-formulaic, and cinematic. This from a 68-year-old Southern female in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks for the great podcast. Linoleum Knife, I also watch What the Flick reviews.
Oh, thanks.
Happy holidays, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks, Linda.
And oh my God, Linda, you should totally watch Breaking Bad. It's so great. Oh my God.
Thank you for your empathy.
Okay, so this is a letter from Guillermo, but it's about the podcast of the cinema.
Yeah, we'll save that.
Another one for the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars.
Can you make folders on that in your mailbox?
I'll make you a folder.
You can't even make a candy cane shaped cranberry bread.
You shut up! I can't too.
Maybe. Your cranberry bread was delicious.
Yeah. Yeah.
What it lacked.
Yeah, Paul Tran. What it was lacked, delicious.
What it lacked in presentation. Made up for it in scrummy yumminess.
Okay, these are all movie.
Well, you know, why don't you look and see if I sent you any emails last time we taped
it? Why don't you pause the recording apparatus for just a second while I find actual LKTV letters?
One moment. And that was indeed all the letters.
Okay. Yeah, we're back, and that was all the letters.
Fair enough.
The end.
All right. Well, we're gonna
not the end.
We're gonna say goodbye. But stick around if you want to hear us talk about making a murderer. But you know, this is a program that is going to be available via subscription very soon. But of course, our regular podcast, Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema, will always and forever be free. And that posts on Sundays usually. And we hope you'll come back for that. And of course, for LKTV, while they're free, and hopefully also when they're not free, you'll still be coming back for these.
The not free version is going to be so inexpensive. Yes. You won't even believe
it. It'll be a bargain.
Yeah. So
anyway, you know, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney and the Schmozno and the Sewers of Paris and the Joel Ryan thing. And thank you, Blue, for our theme music. And, you know, subscribe at iTunes. Get it as the usual. Anyway, all right. We're going to talk about Making a Murderer now. Episode 3.
Go to LinoleumCast at Instagram.
And Twitter.
And Twitter. Go to D. Leland White at Instagram and Twitter. Go to Aduralde at Twitter.
Aduralde.
Mm-hmm.
Join our
Facebook
page, our Facebook group. And
I'm D. Leland White on Facebook. You can friend me there.
I'm the only Alonzo Duralde on all of Facebook, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, okay, so that. If you do not want to hear about Making a Murderer season or episode 3
at all,
adios.
Then goodbye to you now. If you do want to hear about Making a Murderer, you may continue to listen. And if there's something that we consider to be a mega spoiler, we'll tell you in advance.
That seems kind of pointless. I think from this point on, we just consider that anybody listening knows, is not worried about anything we're going to say.
Okay. In 3, 2, 1, goodbye. Now it's time for Making a Murderer.
Episode 3. So Stephen Avery's behind bars.
Oh my God!
After a trumped-up search of his house, in which somehow the car keys have just been cavalierly tossed in the corner in a room that's been searched before.
Right.
And then suddenly they're dragooning his nephew in and totally coercing him during an interrogation to like make up this entire ridiculous story about how the murder victim had been sexually assaulted and chained to the bed and get it
stabbed, throat slit.
Yeah. And again, where's the blood in the room?
No blood. I am obsessing over something very similar to what I was obsessing over in the first two episodes. Poverty and ignorance.
Yeah.
And Mr. Avery, a man whose IQ is 70.
Right.
Okay. Actually says the following to his sister or his father, a family member. I can't remember now which phone conversation this was, with whom this phone conversation happened. Poor people lose, period. Poor people lose all the time, period. That's what he says.
Mm.
And I'm going to guess that that's the theme of this show.
Yeah.
Entirely. Because.
What's that? You won a big fat lawsuit against us after we wrongfully imprisoned you for 18 years? Well, we could pay you, or we could just
frame you for murder.
Exactly.
And take your nephew, your 16-year-old nephew, whose IQ may not even be 70.
Right.
Here's the thing. I was a middle school teacher for 8 years back in Texas. Here's what they do with special ed kids nowadays, quite often. They mainstream them into classes with the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes impossible for the teacher to adequately address the needs of that kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they sink. And it's not done for anyone's self-esteem. It's done for budgetary reasons. It's done because evil politicians won't pony up funding for
public schools.
Special stuff for kids who have different needs in public schools. So the 16-year-old who has no... Who by his actions and his words displays the fact that he has no actual understanding of why he is in the room being interrogated.
Right.
Who asks if he can be done by 1:30 so he can go back to sixth period.
Yes.
Who asks when they finally tell him that he's being arrested, is it just for a day? Am I just arrested for the day? Like, what is being arrested? Why am I sitting in this room?
What have I just told you?
The police officers even say, you do understand that we are police officers, right? And he just is sort of like, mm-hmm.
It reminds me of, did you know that book Our Guys?
Yes, which I never read, but I know you did, and it infuriated you.
Yes. Yeah. It just, you know, when you are dealing with people of a limited mental capacity, it's very easy to completely guide them through an interrogation, a deposition, testimony on the witness stand even, and get them to say exactly what you want them to say.
Going back to the thing about kids being mainstreamed. This kid sat in the interrogation room as though he were being quizzed by a demanding teacher. And he didn't know the answer. And so he was throwing out answers, whatever they were. Well, then what happened? What happened to her head?
He hit her.
Then what happened? He cut her hair, which makes no sense.
Right.
Then what happened? Did he shoot her in the head? Oh, yes. Okay, yes. That's what happened. Because obviously you want that to be the answer. So, okay, that's the answer.
Yeah, you're guessing until they tell you it's right.
Right. And then he says, and then they ask him, oh, so what did he make you do these things? And the kid's like, well, not really. And then out comes the idea, the narrative that is then given to the media is that this child... Mm-hmm. Tearfully broke down after holding it all in.
Right, yes.
And there was no emotion being displayed. There was simply confusion. A state of confusion. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just so unbelievable. Now, granted, for those of you who have watched this show in its entirety and who already know how right or wrong we are about what's next, you know, wait and see until we find out what's next. But as of this moment, this is about poor people and people with limited reasoning ability being railroaded by evil, corrupt Macon County line. Mm. I can't even use the words that I want to use right now because we are a clean podcast.
Right.
I was Rolodexing all the non-profanity in my head and I came up with nothing.
Stink burgers.
Yeah. Despicable. Mm. Despicable people.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's... And they all seem to be peddling as fast as they can to try and discredit the film, but, you know... For the most part, it's...
Yeah, every clickbait thing that I'm not clicking on...
Yeah.
Is sort of like, and here's the damning evidence that they left out. I'm like, well, who gave you that evidence? Who? Where did you get this damning evidence from? Yes. I don't believe anything.
Yeah.
It's just an incredible, this is such an incredible show. Mm. And it got me by the guts because as much as I ran away from the sticky octopus tentacles of that life,
right?
You know, those are my kinfolk. So I cannot stomach watching poor people get effed over.
Yeah.
Y'all should read this book called Hand to Mouth, a book I read last year. It's by a writer named Linda Tirado, T-I-R-A-D-O. You can follow her on Twitter as well, I do. After Barbara Ehrenreich's Nickel and Dimed, that came out in the 90s, where Barbara Ehrenreich posed as a poor person and went and worked all these like crappy menial minimum wage jobs and suffered, you know, for it. And then wrote about it. Linda Tirado actually is a poor person. Well, not so much anymore, but because I think the book has led to lots of opportunities for her. But a really, really just fiercely angry, intelligent, and thoughtful nonfiction book about what it's like to live in poverty and the cycles of just horribleness that you find yourself in by virtue of being born into a family that's already poor.
Right.
And so, so go read that Hand to Mouth. If this show makes you angry, about the same things it makes me angry about, then go read this book. But yeah, that's the line from this episode that just the minute he said that. And this is a guy who knows enough to know he's being vivisected,
right,
by the system. Poor people lose. Poor people lose all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's like, do you put your fate in the hands of a public defender, or do you spend the six figures or more that it requires to mount an actual defense the way he has to do once he settles for a much smaller settlement for the wrongful imprisonment, you know? And all that money goes right back into lawyer land, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll be back next week to talk more about
this show and
other programs. So thank you for tuning in.
Wendy Williams just started back up, so.
Oh, she'll have something to say.
I've got a lot.
You'll have some.
I have a lot of thoughts. over Christmas, I was really sort of not watching a lot of Rachel Maddow with you because I just didn't want to hear any news.
I
was like, it's Christmas. I don't want to hear any news because it's all going to be awful and bad.
Right.
And all I want to know about is sugar plums and dancing in my head. And so now I'm back watching Rachel Maddow. But if I'm going to watch Rachel Maddow, I need Wendy back on TV. I need my balance.
To temper.
I need my balance. I've watched, obviously, yesterday was the first day back after the break. Everyone's fighting over their children. Madonna is fighting with Guy Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
Future and Ciara are having bad problems.
Oh, no.
And it's Future's... They're both being bad. Future is calling her a bee on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And she's running around with baby Future... putting him in football jerseys of her new NFL boyfriend. Bad Ciara.
That's not
bad. Ciara.
And bad Future. Well, and
Madonna's being a pain.
Yeah.
That kid's 15. He doesn't want to go on tour with you, Mom. He wants to be home with Fun Dad in London.
Yes.
Yeah.
He wants to, like, you know, put on the paper crown from the crackers and read the dumb
joke. And have a roast.
Yes.
Have a prime rib.
And a pudding.
He doesn't want to have smoked fish with Tracy Emin on Christmas Day.
All right. Well, more on the Wendy Williams revelations next week. Anyway, thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time. Goodbye.